From WXXI News, this is Education Friday on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made just a few weeks ago when we met Zoe Weil, the founder of the Institute for Humane Education, and we had a conversation about what education is and the way it impacts the way kids grow up to see the world, whether it comes to understanding where your products come from and the conditions in which they're made, or the impact that we have on the environment with the purchase of a coffee mug or a shirt that we're wearing. That conversation went in a lot of different directions, and today I'm honored to say that we get to continue it with a much more local focus. My guests for the hour are the co-founders of the Rochester River School, and we're going to talk about what it is, what it's designed to be, and how it came to be. And let me go ahead and welcome the co-founders of the Rochester River School. First, we've got a visiting professor at Hobart and William Smith Colleges, among others. Joel Helfrich teaches at a number of places, but he's also a historian by trade and a co-founder of the Rochester River School. It's nice to see you in studio, Joel.
Nice to see you, too.
I feel like all we do is talk offline. It's nice to talk to you with a microphone.
It's good to see you.
And also in studio is Jerickson Pichardo, who is a co-founder of the Rochester River School, a Hobart senior, and nice to see you in studio as well, Jerickson.
Nice seeing you, too.
All right. Well, Joel, back me up to, as you're a historian by trade, so you get to tell the story, a little bit of the history of how this came to be. And Jerickson's own educational history, I know, plays into it. But talk to me about what the mission of the Rochester River School is.
Well, to answer the first question, so we, Jerickson was a student of mine at Hobart a few years ago, and he walked into my office one day and he said, you know, what do you know about the Harbor School? And I think Jerickson's thinking was that I would be excited by what they had done in New York City with this maritime-based educational system in high school. And after he left my office, I did a little digging on the internet and came across a number of videos, which I watched. And then in addition to that, I found a speech that Bill Clinton had given at the Harbor School, a fundraiser for the Harbor School. And in that speech, he basically says, not only is this an amazing place, but it should be replicated in every single port city in the world. And so I thought, well, Rochester is a port city. That's my hometown. And I flippantly said to Jerickson, you know, why don't we create something similar to that here in Rochester? And to Jerickson's credit, he went forward, got a little bit of money from the Hobart William Smith president and from Career Services. And we spent a good portion of the summer meeting with a lot of people, nonprofits, the people from the mayor's office, educators, principals, teachers, and other interested parties, and really have been trying to, for the last 8 months or so, figure out, can we make this happen? And we've basically come to the conclusion that we want to create a Rochester River School. It'll eventually be a 5th through 12th grade school, an urban school, and we think that we can make it happen.
There's a lot of interesting questions about why 5th grade, for example, is a starting point and a lot of other things. But before we even get there, Jerickson, you walked into that office to talk to Professor Helfrich. And what did you have any inkling the road you were about to go down with that?
Well, when I first arrived to his office, I was just trying to show him what we used to do at the Harbor School since I was a student there. And as soon as he told me, let's create a school, I was like, that's perfect. That's something I always wanted to do. So why not now?
So again, Jerickson, the full name of the school is the Urban Assembly New York Harbor School.
Yes.
And it's been... Again, it's been sort of championed and celebrated by the likes of education activists, but Bill Clinton. I mean, it really is something that's got a lot of attention. Give me a sense for what it was like for you there.
Well, the Harbor School was the best experience I've ever had in my life. It was a life-changing experience because when I first got to the Harbor School, my English level was very low. I come from the Dominican Republic, and when I the middle school I went to, it was very difficult because I was in bilingual classes and I did not speak English very well. But then after I got to the Harbor School, that's when everything started to change. The Harbor School was, for me, was like a happy mistake, let's say, because I applied to 4 different schools for high school, and the Harbor School was my last choice. I did not know anything about the Harbor School. I was not informed a lot about the environment. And when I received my acceptance letter, that was the only school that I got into. So my first year at the Harbor School, I learned a lot of things. first through a class called Introduction to the Harbor. In this class, we went to the different waterways in New York City. We used to take the train to like the East River, the Hudson River, and do a lot of science stuff. We used to do water sampling, such as the pH of the water, salinity of the water. And through this class, we learned a lot of amazing things, such as how much water does an oyster filters a day. And that fact is that an oyster filters about 60 gallons of water a day. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. So that's when my experience started at the Harbor School. Also, when I got there the first time, I did not know how to swim. And that's something, coming from the Caribbean, people would think, oh, you probably should know how to swim. You have a lot of beaches and rivers to swim in. But I was not aware of any of that. I was not aware of my surroundings either. My sophomore year at the Harbor School, I took a class called Marine Technology. And in this class, we were building boats. And these boats were donated to an organization called Rocking the Boat in the Bronx in New York City. And, well, after we built these boats, what we did was get our safety boating certification, where we were allowed to drive a small boat. And later on my junior year, what I did was join a scuba diving class. And in this class, we were able to get up to our scientific diver certification. And I've gotten like 6 certifications out of the New York Harbor School. I got my open water, advanced diver, scientific diver, rescue diver, and a bunch of other things that I know that if I wouldn't have gone to the Harbor School, I wouldn't have gotten it right now.
Diver certification for someone who went there not knowing how to swim.
And also someone who did not have any knowledge of any of these things.
What was an average, there's less of an average day when you're in that kind of a setting, but the best you can, tell me about an average day.
Well, an average day for me at the Harbor School, I'll arrive sometimes like 7 a.m. to go scuba diving and working on oysters. But an average day, like classes would start at 9 a.m. and then you'll be done by 4. But then there were a lot of programs involved throughout the day, so... Like, you have your English class, you have your math, your science class, and all your Regents classes. And then you will have the extracurricular classes. Well, not extracurriculars, but more like electives, which involve the marine technology class, the introduction to the harbor class. We also had, robotics class, where we used to build, like, small robots, like water robots. And then we also had the aquaculture lab where we used to grow our own oysters and fish as well.
All right, so you came to Hobart with an aim to do what?
Well, my aiming was first to do only biology, but then I got caught up with like a lot of the things that I saw in the world and the environment and how things have been changing throughout the years. And I just decided to go with environmental studies with minors in biology, education, and then Latin American studies.
Is there any reason to think you ever would have done anything like that if you hadn't gone to the Harbor School?
I wouldn't have. I was not aware of anything that I'm aware of now. And if it wasn't because of the Harbor School, I probably wouldn't have known anything still about the environment, because probably I would have come to Hobart, but with a different purpose. And probably like something like more development, more competition, rather than doing something for the community or for the people.
We're talking about the Harbor School down in New York City, but we're talking also about the creation of the Rochester River School, opening fall 2016. Is that right, Professor Helfrich?
That's right, yep.
Fall of 2016. And I know there are common questions that people will ask. I had a conversation last night with someone about what you're planning to do, and I suspect their questions they asked me are questions that you both have had, but let's walk through some of that, because when we're talking about an education that has a heavy emphasis on environment, water, marine activity, a lot of people will probably ask, well, are you getting a balanced education? Are you getting the basics, the basic core, and I don't mean to say common core, that's a bit of a pejorative right now, whether we like it or not, but I mean a basic core of education. So I'll start with you, Joel. Those questions probably come up, and what do you tell people?
you know, we're adding to rather than taking away something. So, you know, we're going to have English and history and or social studies and all the in math and other subjects that you would normally have at any school. And our focus is based on the principles of humane education. So we're also concerned about issues surrounding the environment, human rights, also animal rights, and cultural issues. And so that's the drive. Those are the driving principles for our school. We don't see it as a way that, in which we're losing anything. We anticipate that students will that our curriculum will be linked to the Common Core, and we don't foresee any hurdles in that regard. There's a forthcoming school being created in New York City called the Solutionary School that Zoe Weil is helping to create based on the principles of humane education. And we're using their curriculum to an extent for the creation of our school. We believe that using an innovative curriculum like this will get students engaged and want to go to school and eventually graduate from high school. So, you know, we haven't encountered too many critics yet. But I do think that we're offering something that's different and hopefully will be successful.
How many students, fifth grade through 12, how many students?
It's a great question. We don't know. One number that came up was 800, and that's based on the Harbor School model of 100 students per grade. But we've also been talking with some former principals from School Without Walls and the Fairport superintendent and other folks who have said that maybe 250 or 240 students for all eight of those grade levels would be more accurate. So there are a number of things that we still haven't figured out yet. We don't have all the answers. You know, we've never created a school before, but we're moving forward and trying to figure these things out. When we initially started, we thought we were creating a high school. You know, we thought we're going to create a second Harbor School, but a Rochester Harbor School. And in the process of doing that and speaking with not only folks from the district, but also parents and also charter school leaders and teachers from the district and elsewhere, we realized that our students would be starting at a huge disadvantage by high school. You know, in some cases, two or three grade levels. Last week, I heard maybe even five grade levels behind in reading, writing, and math. So we've changed our process and changed what we're doing throughout, and we're keeping an open mind, so that when we get new information, when we get new ideas, we're saying, okay, well, can we implement them? Can we put them in place at our school? And so our 5th through 12th grade, that might change too. We might wind up going K through 12, but we're continuing to move forward with this project, meet people, and figure it all out.
School will be where?
In Rochester. It'll be downtown, hopefully. We're praying, you know, for the High Falls area, if we can make it work. It would likely be in for to open it will likely be elsewhere, but we'd ultimately like to create a school from the ground up with river access.
Okay, and who are the types of students who will end up going to the Rochester River School?
It's a great question. We anticipate that it'll be kids that are interested in a unique and different school. I don't know yet. But maybe Jerickson can talk a little bit about that.
Well, I would say, like, our main target might be students with economic disadvantage. And the reason why I would think that's the best target is because of the poverty levels and how I come from a poor neighborhood as well, and I would like to see some changes in our cities. A lot of students with disadvantages do not have the knowledge and are not informed about the things that are going on in the world, and a lot of them end up in the streets. And that's one of the reasons why I want to create a project that will take out a lot of kids from the streets and inform them and lead them into college.
Interesting thing is that a lot of people who grow up in this area still don't think of it as a maritime or water sort of water access city, et cetera. And right. There's a river, there's a lake, and you obviously have those resources, but it will be very interesting to see the way mentalities kind of change as kids learn. Already had a couple questions online, and you can follow the program and tweet to the program at Evan Dawson on Twitter. You can always email me here, or you can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. A couple of people online are asking about cost, what the average cost could be, and we also have a question about admission requirements. So admission requirements, additional cost.
Well, it's going to be a district school. It's not going to be a charter school.
So that's what we want to make sure we make very clear to people.
Correct. It's not a charter school. The hope is that the city school district will approve our school, hopefully sometime next year, so that we can continue to move forward. So it would be a free school. It'd be a not traditional, but a district public school. So the costs would be, you know, what they are, zero, essentially.
And do you... I know this is not moving forward, at least to the place where it is now, without you already talking to some people. But what's been the feedback you've been getting, Joel?
Well, I think it's been really positive. We've gotten a number of people that have come to the table and been excited about what we're doing. And that's not just parents, but we've had some interaction with principals, with, you know, the city school district, the board of the city schools, you know, former teachers, current teachers. A lot of parents have been energized by it. So we've gotten a lot of positive response. We were fortunate enough to bring Zoe Weil to Rochester in November. She's one of the co-founders of the Institute for Humane Education in Maine. And, you know, there was a positive response to her, not only from the Rochester Teachers Association, 250 teachers showed up to hear her speak, but also during a workshop that she led that weekend that she was here. So we anticipate that people are going to continue to be supportive and excited about what we're doing. You know, we think that it's not going to solve all the problems that we have here in Rochester, but we think that it will help in many regards.
Well, there are so many questions that we have, and I hope we can fit them all in this hour, because I think we're already getting questions online. I see the phone's starting to ring, and people want to talk about what's going on here. I don't think we should go any further, though, without at least talking a little bit more about what humane education means. And we had tremendous feedback when Zoe Weil was on this program a few weeks ago. My short answer, Joel and Jerickson, after talking to Zoe Weil, was that her view and the notion of humane education is that... similar to the conversation I had with a sculptor and artist and the creator of the Lost Bird Project recently about extinction, which is that people aren't generally callous by nature. They aren't indifferent. We're just ignorant because people are busy. People are trying to get through their day. They're trying to pay bills. They're trying to often raise families. So they may not realize the shirt I just bought was created in terrible labor conditions by 10-year-olds, or the mug that I just purchased came from awful, awful labor conditions. Most of what we buy is not made domestically. Sometimes we can buy something with a Made in the USA label and it comes from a U.S. territory that still doesn't have good labor standards and practices. And the conversation with Zoe Weil to me said essentially this. We've got to raise kids who understand the way the world works and understand if I make a purchase, that money goes somewhere. And that's essentially voting with your wallet that how it's made is okay. And that isn't saying manufacturing is bad or commerce is bad. It is to say you should know how things are made, where they're made, and if you don't like it, change it. Sometimes it's the way what we buy. Sometimes it's what our actions do and the impact on the environment. And a humane education says you ought to be able to read a food label and understand how the animals are treated and where the food comes from. And we're just not raising kids right now to really think about that. And I don't think Zoe Weil thinks that the education system in this country is malicious. It's just got these gaps, and humane education can fill that in. That was my take, but Joel, I'd love to hear your take. Jerickson, I'd love to hear yours, and then we'll get to the phones.
Well, the purpose of humane education is to teach students how to be compassive, so the act of compassion, respect for animals, the environment, and other human beings. Humane education also teaches the skills of commitment to live ethically, sustainably, and peacefully. And this principle, according to the Institute for Humane Education, is composed of four different things. And that includes providing accurate information so that people can have the knowledge to face challenges in the world. Fostering the three C's, which is curiosity, creativity, critical thinking. And the purpose of that is so that we have the tools to meet challenges. We also have the three R's, which is reverence, respect, and responsibility, so that we have the motivation to confront these challenges. And the last one is offering positive choices and tools for problem solving so that we will be able to solve the challenges.
So what we have to remember is that the students who are going to be entering our school, if they entered in fifth grade, they're born in 2006. And so these are 21st century students. And unfortunately, you know, our educational models are based on the Enlightenment and kind of forged in the 19th century. And so what we're saying is that perhaps some bits of that are not adequate for dealing with 21st century problems. And so what we want to create are doers, are students that really carry out the final stage of critical thinking, which is doing, you know, doing something. And so what we hope to do are have students who say, well, look, we have amazing amounts of violence, we have abuse, we have war, we have all the kind of social and societal ills in our world, and those are continuing here in the 21st century. So what we hope to do are create students, or educate students rather, to figure out ways in which they can solve some of those problems, really take on some of those problems. Even at the fifth grade level, you know, there are things that we imagine students can be can do to, you know, for example, figure out ways in which to take on environmental degradation and so forth. So we really need to create solutionaries, as Zoe Weil would say, or people who are willing to do something and have that be a common purpose of our education.
Part of our conversation with Zoe Weil talked about as well, it kind of seeked to head off at the pass this notion that this kind of approach is anti-economic. In fact, in many ways, it's very much favors a domestic production with better labor standards. And I got an email from a listener who said, you're ignoring basic standards of economics. The emailer said, look, yes, a lot of what we buy is made in China, for example, but even though we may not like the labor standards, real wages in China have gone up thanks to our purchasing habits, et cetera. And, you know, we can't micromanage every action we take down to that level. Now, we can all agree to disagree on certain things there, but, you know, Joe, what do you make of that? Are we missing economic principles here?
No, I think that the caller, or the emailer rather, makes a good point. You know, look, if we are going to create a sustainable society, we need to have economics as a kind of base of that sustainable work. And so along with kind of the social issues and along with environmental concerns, you know, those three items are the basis for sustainability, broadly defined. So I think that the caller makes an interesting and valid point. You know, we're not at all out here to try and say that economics don't matter. And far from it, I think that these students are going to get a very kind of solid basis in economic understanding and theory and practice. It's just that they're going to hopefully be better able to make the make choices that consider all life and all forms of life on the planet, not just ones that consider the kind of bottom line and so forth. So that's how I would respond.
Yeah, I mean, before I get to a phone call, do you guys both agree with the notion that for the most part, people are not educated about, let's say we buy a shirt for somebody. Let's say we buy a coffee mug. We are not analyzing the label. Let's say we buy pork at the store. We're not analyzing the label to understand its origins. Most people are not doing that because they just don't care and they're callous and they don't care how those pigs were treated. They don't care what the labor conditions were. Do you accept that most people are just busy and that this is not part of the educational fabric of the way we're raised right now? But it's not because people are inherently callous. Do you agree with that idea?
I think that people are just not aware of of these things. Me personally, before, when I used to buy stuff, I would just go and get it because it looked good, because I liked it. But I never put any thought about, like, where is my t-shirt coming from? And now that I have done a lot more research and look at different things, I have been able to see, like, what goes into my t-shirt? What happens when, like, what is the main thing that creates a t-shirt? So let's say the cotton. The cotton can be produced in the USA, but then it's exported to China, it's exported to Philippines. And then what happens to that? Then people there have intensive labor and they don't get paid a lot of money. And then it's just a whole process that people are not aware of. And I think that if people were aware of those things, they would make more responsible choices.
Joel, agree?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think that there's a lot of ways where, you know, we're just not aware of things. You know, you had a great conversation 2 months ago on this program about Columbus Day. You know, people don't really think about Columbus Day, you know, and yet, you know, we should be really interrogating the decision to continue to have a Columbus Day. We've seen a number of communities, not only in the United States, but in Latin America as well, and South America, that have moved away from Columbus Day and are now having Indigenous Peoples Days and other kind of similarly named things. So, I mean, I think that there's a lot of ways in which we perpetuate things unknowingly. And those things oftentimes do harm to other people, to the people who are actually perpetuating them, but also to the planet and also to other animals. And so, you know, I think that having that ingrained in students at a much earlier age would be totally beneficial.
What we're going to do now is take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to get to your phone calls and talk more about what it's going to take for the Rochester River School to become a reality by the fall of 2016. What Joel and Jerickson want to do in terms of reaching out to the city school district, who they've been working with, more about the feedback they've been getting, and your questions answered as we talk about what humane education is. Our guests for the hour are Joel Helfrich and Jerickson Pichardo, who are the co-founders of what they hope is a brand new kind of school in Rochester. Short break here on this Education Friday. Your phone calls next. Welcome back to Connections on this Education Friday. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's grab a phone call, and it's Bonnie in Rochester. You're first up. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yeah, hi. A comment and then kind of a recommendation, I guess, is that, first of all, I agree with you that one of the big pieces that people aren't educated to thinking in this manner is I have had some experience with interdisciplinary approaches, which is kind of what this is in a more technical use of the word. And it's extremely valuable. It's holistic. But I disagree a little bit in the sense that you have to remember, if we live up to real equality and valuing people, that means the people who just kind of value money for its own sake and people who control a lot of things, that could be threatening to them. They might not say that to you, but if it's done right and it's done on a large scale, you know, it would be better for the whole world, but it might not always be in the agenda of some people who have other agendas. So that's my comment. My suggestion is, I imagine you're aware of the race and equity presentations about racism that have been done over the last few months. There's a subcommittee on education. I participated in that, and some very, very good people who know education inside and out, who know racism inside and out. And I'd really, really like to recommend that you get together with them. And I mean, I can help facilitate that. It would be great, by the way, Evan, to have that on one of your future programs, because we need to have these two issues combined in a really good discussion. So the best of what education can offer, and hopefully this example is one of them, and these other practical, realistic things about racism and how we can, you know, deal with that, at least a more in-depth conversation about that. So I would strongly recommend that, because sometimes you need to talk to people about these things. You may not, and I don't want to degrade anybody, but you may not be talking always to the right people who are really in-depth knowledgeable about this, but you may not know their names. So I would strongly recommend that, and I'd be happy to help facilitate it.
Bonnie, thanks for the call. Go ahead, Joel.
Yeah, thanks, Bonnie. We agree. We're willing to talk to anybody who's willing to talk to us. We believe in intersectional social justice. So all these issues, whether they're regarding race, whether they're regarding the environment, you know, they're all related at some level. And so we're willing to collaborate and cooperate and work with anybody who is willing to work with us. Our approach has been one of kind of an from an organizer's perspective, which is my some of my background is in, is to cast a wide net and to see who's out there who's willing to collaborate with us. And so the Race and Equity Subcommittee on Education would be a great place to start.
We're talking about the Rochester River School, and the co-founders of the Rochester River School are in studio with us, Joel Helfrich, who is a visiting professor at Hobart and William Smith Colleges and a historian by training, Jerickson Pichardo, who is a senior at Hobart, going to graduate in 2015, and a co-founder of the school that they hope to open in the fall of 2016. It would be, for now at least, in the current construct, grades 5 through 12 as part of the Rochester Public City School District, but they've got some things that have got to get done before that happens, and I know there's a long way to go on that. So in a moment, let's talk about more of the hurdles to clear. But I also want to talk about the fact that, again, when you are in Rochester, New York, Western New York, Upstate New York, unless you live right in the water, a lot of people don't think about aquatics very much. They don't think about maritime living. And this is going to be the Rochester River School, based in some ways on the Harbor School that Jerickson attended in New York City. Joel, I know some interesting things have happened on this score as you guys have started to work toward this. Tell me about that.
Well, so a few years ago, I was part of a festival organizing committee and was a coordinator for a festival here in the High Falls. And what was amazing about that is that we had politicians who had literally never been in the High Falls, and yet they represent this part of the city or this part of Monroe County.
They told you they'd never been to High Falls?
Right. And yes. We had tourists that had never been in High Falls. That makes sense. But we also have children who live within two or three blocks from the High Falls who had never seen the gorge. They'd certainly never been down in the gorge, and they'd never seen the High Falls. So, that's kind of frightening to me. In June, we had a discussion with a CEO whose business is literally a block away from the river, and he had never seen the river. And so Jerickson and I think our jaws, dropped when we heard that. And so we need to kind of figure out a way to rectify that and make it, square that somehow. Because we have a legacy and assets here that are totally underappreciated and underutilized. And so what we're saying is let's refocus, some bit of time each week with getting students on the river, down in the gorge. They could be doing hydrogeology. They could be doing ecological journaling. They could be doing art projects in the gorge and along the river. And so really some portion of every week is going to be spent kind of reconnecting to this ecological wonder and totally undervalued, underappreciated legacy.
Well, when you talk about the possible impact of living right near a river and never having been there, or living in this area and almost never being on water. And then you look at what a river school would do, the kind of education. I know both of you are so committed to understanding, sort of having an environmental understanding. Jerickson, you've talked about that. And then we talk about the value of water itself. Look at California. I don't mean today. I mean, California's had a terrible weather week, and we certainly feel for them. They're dealing with 6-plus inches of rain in 24 hours in some parts. It's devastating. But they're coming off of a lengthy drought. Water are a tremendously important resource going forward. And let me start with you, Joel. I think a lot of us probably don't think enough about water and just how we probably take it for granted. I can turn on a faucet in 10 different places on this floor alone, and I've got a bottle right here in front of me. It's a piece of cake for me.
Right.
But water is probably misunderstood.
Definitely. And so, what can we do here in Rochester? We can certainly draw more attention and raise a little bit more awareness about all the different waterways we have, whether it's the river, the lake by its connection, the various Finger Lakes that we are related to in some way, certainly the Erie Canal. And students need to be aware of these things and working to try and make them either better or to, care for them in different ways. We may not have the water scarcity here in Rochester that we do in California or Arizona or other parts of the country, but that doesn't mean that we should be any less aware of what we're doing here in Rochester.
Jerickson, you feel like we take it for granted?
I feel like we take a lot of things for granted in our daily lives. I traveled to Australia about a year ago, and I was studying abroad there in my biology class, and I was able to learn a lot of different things that we take for granted, like water, let's say. Over there, you're not allowed to take a shower for more than 5 minutes. Here you take a shower for what, half an hour, an hour, and you're just not thinking about it because it's something that you not need, that you probably think that you do not need or will need in the future, but right now, like, a lot of places are being heavily polluted. A perfect example of this would be the New York Harbor in New York City. This place used to contain half of the world's oysters, if you guys, I don't know if you knew that, but they used to have half of the world's oysters, and right now there was none because of over-harvesting, and people were not thinking about the benefit of an oyster in the harbor. And this is when the Harbor School came into play with the creation of the Billion Oyster Project.
What's the benefit of an oyster in the harbor?
So the benefit of an oyster is that it filters about 60 gallons of water a day per oyster, and it cleans up all the toxins out of the water. So if you think about these things, like, okay, we're putting all of our waste into the water, but what's going to happen later on? That water is not going to be, nobody's going to be able to use it. The people from the city will not be able to go to that area because they'll be afraid of getting sick from being in the water. And a lot of the people in New York City do not have access to that water because of the pollution that is there. So the Harbor School is doing this Billion Oyster Project to put in a billion oysters by 2025. And as of now, they have about 200 million oysters back in the water. And I'm proud to say that I was part of this project. And, you know, it has raised a lot of awareness in New York City, and I think that we could do something similar here, but probably with a different kind of project. Mm-hmm.
So, go ahead, Joel.
So project-based learning is a kind of key ingredient for our school. You know, we've talked about, could we do, for example, a billion bug project here in Western and Central New York, where we reintroduce the nine-spotted ladybug, which is the state insect, to Western New York. You know, this is an insect that was thought to be extinct a number of years ago. It was rediscovered on Long Island. You know, could we reintroduce the nine-spotted ladybug, and what would be the kind of ecological consequences of such an action? And we could see a fifth grader being involved in that project and a 12th grader being involved in that project. So we really see a lot of benefit in terms of getting these students engaged and working on a project or a series of projects at our school. You know, and the last thing about this is that what we're trying to do is also improve the kind of sense of place, you know, and the environmental consciousness of this area, which is extremely needed. You know, we need to start caring about this city even more than we do, and this place even more than we do. And we foresee a time in which the school will be able to do just that, you know, have these students really care about the place where they live.
Well, we're talking about a school, if it opens with grades 5 through 12, could be K through 12. You could start with 800 students. You could have a couple thousand students. Will you have the instructors who are qualified to teach on these different areas, Joel?
It's a great question. We know there are great teachers here in Rochester. That's clear. And there are great principals here in Rochester. That's clear as well. You know, we may have to go outside to get some teachers, but we also foresee, and based on some of the conversations that we've had with teachers who are in the city school district, that there are teachers who are more than qualified to, you know, with maybe a little bit of training in humane education, to work with us and to teach at our school. So, you know, yes and no. I mean, I think it will take a little bit of work, but I don't think it's something that we can't make work.
Brenna writes and wants to know, are they raising money for this project, especially because if it's going to be in the city school district and you don't necessarily have a set location yet, what are you doing? Are you raising money?
That's a great question. So we haven't asked anyone for money yet, but we do foresee a time, hopefully next year, where we will be able to do so. What we're doing is creating a funding arm, a 501c3 organization that will be the funding arm for the school. At the Harbor School, they have the Harbor School Foundation, and what that does is it reaches out, raises money. The Harbor School in late August, early September, was able to get a $5 million grant from the National Science Foundation for its Billion Oyster Project. We foresee a time next year where we'll be able to do the same and reach out and try to get funding for all the projects that we're going to do, which are not cheap and certainly won't be funded by state and local and federal tax dollars. So our plan is, again, to create a nonprofit funding arm. Hopefully we can do that by sometime next summer, and then go forward and have an ask to, you know, various foundations and local agencies, as well as kind of national and maybe even international organizations.
You just need to get Bill Clinton in the room, right? I mean, he loves the Harbor School in New York City.
Right, and his global initiative is not necessarily a funder, but they're a strong supporter, and they've brought additional dollars to that school. So, you know, we think that we're going to be able to do the same. We have a lot of great organizations and companies here in Rochester. We believe that if we have, for example, an agriculture and food component, that that might bring certain businesses and organizations to the table. So we've been thinking about this quite a bit, and we do hope to get to a place sometime next year where we can have an ask. We also do have two students at the University of Rochester who have been working on a business plan with us, and they presented their findings this week. And, you know, they taught us a number of things that we didn't know about funding, and about the process of creating a business plan. So we're going to continue to move forward. And really, we've been told that by a number of people, regardless of their political stance in education, that if we can get the community, if we can get a solid curriculum, and if we can get that third ingredient, kind of a business plan working together, and we really focus on all those three things, that we have the greatest chance for success. So we're going to keep, you know, pushing forward with this and see where how far we can get.
Writing to the program, here's Jake. He says, perhaps a bit off topic as they won't have the school running for at least another 2 years, but given the amount of effort they're putting into a wonderful school like this, what are the true roadblocks to getting wonderful projects like this applied at a larger scale where it has more globally beneficial implications? It seems to me to be a multi-generational effort, and that saddens me a bit because of how many are being left behind.
If there's an applied question in there, let me think. I believe that we need to start local always. And so, you know, by doing some project locally or a series of projects locally, that can be, I believe that though each of the projects that we're thinking about can be scaled up, but we really need to get something off the ground locally.
Yeah, I mean, right now you can only do what you can do.
Right.
If you do it well, I'm curious to know if Zoe Weil has experienced this with the Institute for Humane Education. We talked a bit about some of the developing things that are happening through her institute. Your school would be based on the principles of humane education that we talked about with her. But is there a chance that eventually what is a slow build becomes a large-scale growth? I mean, schools by choice adopting humane education standards or
right.
New schools opening. I mean, is that unrealistic, Joel?
No, I mean, I think that's the direction that we have to take. And I think that Zoe Weil was pretty clear about that, you know, if we had more people thinking about these issues across the board in the United States and globally, I think that we'd see changes on a number of levels, not only with regards to the environment, but also human rights. And just at a basic level about building relationships and whether those are personal relationships or, you know, company relationships or what have you. So. I think there's a lot of truth to that.
Besides fundraising, gentlemen, what's the biggest hurdle that could potentially prevent this school from being opened?
And I think that fundraising is an issue. Getting our nonprofit status is an issue right now. We hope to get to a place where we can present a proposal to the school board. And I think that that's going to really determine a lot of how we move forward. I don't foresee too many obstacles in that regard. I think that we're offering something that's really new and different and innovative. But right now, that's, I think, where we might, hit a roadblock. But I don't think it's something that we can't overcome and that we can't figure out a way to navigate. So.
Well, again, we're talking to Joel and Jerickson are the co-founders of what would be the Rochester River School if it opens. And we don't have members of the school board in the district here. If they were in the room with us, what do you think they would tell us?
They're
open-minded? Do you think they're open-minded?
They're looking for best practices. At least that's what we've been told. And so we believe that, our school isn't something radically new. We're offering a school that's based on other models. And so we already think that we've got an advantage in that regard. These are proven strategies, whether they're at the New York Harbor School or elsewhere. Project-based learning is nothing new, similar to expeditionary learning, nothing new. So we believe that we're offering something unique and different, and that that the board should be in favor of this. And if they're looking at best practices, we think that our school will be employing best practices that can be replicated within the city and then beyond. So I don't know. I mean, we'll see, I guess.
Jerickson, when you look at your education before you went to the Harbor School and the life that you sort of had growing up, you talk about the way it changed you. Is it a case where education in general, speaking as a whole, is just ignoring these issues? Or is it difficult enough, especially in urban areas, for schools to just feel like they've got to do the basics? I mean, is it asking too much for impoverished districts to be able to do this kind of specialized education and really higher level thought?
I don't think that is impossible to get it done, but the problem is that teachers in general are just focusing on the basics. They're just focusing on getting all the exams, all the standardized testing done, and making sure that their students have good grades. But what are the students getting out of that? I feel like a lot of the students are just, nowadays, they are just memorizing stuff, and then after they're done, they're just throwing it out the window. And then at the end of the day, they don't have the education that they would have gotten if they would have been working hands-on projects. And I feel like with me, it changed me because I started off with all the basic learning and all the standardized testing. But then again, when I got to the Harbor School, I learned based on projects. I learned about water. I learned about all these different things that I didn't know before. And while also doing the regions, the New York State regions, and all these different things that are required for public school in New York City.
Well, Ward writes to us and asks if there would be common standardized testing just like most schools. So I'm sure you've had that question. You were just talking about that, Jerickson, at the River School.
Well, if it is part of
the public school district.
It's part of the public school district, so that's something that we cannot avoid. But the way that I was thinking of doing it is that we will teach the things that are required, but also we will have experiential learning so that students can implement what they learn in the classroom out in the field.
Well, I know Joel is a big fan of standardized tests.
I'm totally in support of them.
it's the world you're going to be in, right? I mean, to some degree, you have to operate within the rules within that world, I guess.
Right. I mean, we would love not to have Common Core. We would love to not, you know, to have to take some of these tests. But for now, you know, we have to figure out a way in which to open the school and link our curriculum to Common Core.
Stephen on Twitter writes to us, Rochester Business Journal had a piece today on Rochester's competitive advantage with its cheap source of water. I love the Harbor School idea. I haven't seen the RBJ piece, but just another reminder that we are in an aquatic world and we have these resources around us. It's easy for us to forget about them. And then Jennifer wanted to know, Jennifer said, I'm a teacher and very interesting idea, but are what they are saying, I'm trying to read an email, are they saying that the average teacher is not doing enough? I don't think that they're trying to malign public school teachers, but Jerickson, answer Jennifer's question as best you can.
Well, I'm not trying to say that teachers are not doing enough, but they're being forced to do it. Because it's not them. Teachers want to teach us to the best of their abilities. But then again, when you have a lot of rules implemented into your education system, that's when the problem becomes just like, okay, let's get the students to learn this, this, and that. And then at the end of the day, they forget about the rest. The teacher is not the problem. The problem is actually the system.
Right.
Joel?
No, I agree totally. And, you know, it's the reason why we want to create a district school. You know, we also believe in organized labor. We don't see a problem with the teachers. You know, I think that if there are problems in New York State or across the United States in terms of education K through 12, I don't think that those are that's not the fault of the teachers. You know, I think that we have just as good or better teachers now than we've ever had in U.S. history. So I don't think that that's the problem that we need to be really tackling. Nor do I think that our school is necessarily going to tackle some of those problems. You know, what we're hoping to do is offer something unique and something different and not malign teachers.
Yeah, and just over a minute left here. Let our listeners know if they want to sort of follow the progress. Is there an easier way to do that, especially online, if they want to kind of know how the River School is progressing and if you're on track?
Well, they can follow us on Facebook. Our page is facebook.com/Rochester River School, and that's the easiest way for you to get updates on our school.
facebook.com/Rochester River School. I'm not going to ask you what happens if it doesn't work. I will just ask, there has to be a chance that 2 years is a little too ambitious, that it might not be 2016. Are you come to accept that sometimes it moves a little more slowly than you'd like, Joel?
Two things about that. I haven't worked on anything in the last 20 years that I felt as confident about. The second thing is that we've been told by everybody, again, regardless of where they stand on education, regardless of whether they're in the charter school movement or in the district, that 2 years or a little less than 2 years is not too ambitious. So we've been told that by numerous people. We think that we're at a good place right now where we need to be. And we foresee that if we can hit our targets for various things next year, that we should be on track for opening in 2016.
Have you met with anybody who told you, this is not a good idea, I don't support it?
No.
I don't know.
No.
Nobody yet.
Thank goodness. Well, or at least they've said on their hands or on their lips or whatever.
Well, facebook.com/Rochester River School. Joel Helfrich and Jerickson Pichardo telling us all about what they'd like to see happen. And it would be a pretty remarkable place if it happens in the fall of 2016 as the target. Keep us updated. Come back and talk to us.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I know you will, and thank you for taking the time. It's Education Friday, short break, and we come back with one of the great music educators in the country. Stay with us.